Well, it's called the A word in some professional and academic circles. They call aerosol transmission the A word because if you mention this word out loud in some circles, well, you get your head taken off. I'm speaking quite deliberately and specifically of one very distinguished COVID-19 researcher at Oxford University who has received death threats for daring to speak openly to the international community about COVID-19 spreading via aerosol infection, and so many people don't want to hear it. One who has been saying this from at least May of last year is Kim Prather, a distinguished professor in atmospheric chemistry at the University of California in San Diego, and also the distinguished professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography at the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry at UC San Diego. And she's speaking loudly about this too. She's talking to you this morning to talk about just how we can manage this hotel quarantine as we're trying to do here in Australia, when clearly these new COVID-19 variants are so infectious. And aerosol transmission between rooms, from rooms into hallways in hotel quarantine, has to be dealt with somehow. Professor Prather, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Yes, good to talk with you too. Thanks for having me.
What is the evidence as we know it right now about aerosol transmission, particularly when you're talking about a hotel-based quarantine system like we run here in Australia?
Yeah, so, all evidence at this point that we have so far points to aerosol transmission, airborne transmission, which is, you know, a different way of sort of looking at how viruses get around. So yeah, there has been a lot of pushback, but I think now it is catching, at least here, it's catching more momentum because, I mean, basically, once we acknowledge, I just keep saying, you know, people shouldn't get upset by it. They should acknowledge it so we can fix it because it's a very fixable problem. But, you know, the standard precautions that people are using, like in your quarantine hotels for droplets or getting too close to someone, those just aren't enough when aerosols get out and float in the air.
Can you make a hotel, just thinking of any standard international hotel, and you've got tons of them there in America, Professor, can you make a hotel, even with no air exchange between rooms, can you make it safe for COVID-19 quarantine?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been following along, and it just, you know, what it comes down to is the right masks. I hear that they're sort of changing policies there now, but, you know, really, if it's aerosols, the safest thing, and we're coming to grips with this ourselves, is really an N95. The surgical masks leak kind of on the sides, and so what we're starting to do here in the U.S., we don't have access to an N95 as we're wearing surgical and then a tighter, snugger, you know, well-fitting cloth mask over the top of that. So we're starting to double mask with these more infectious or more transmissible, I should say, variants that are coming out. So if people wear masks, if they ventilate the rooms properly, if, you know, just sort of following sort of the layers of protection, you know, even one of the best things you should don't hear as much about, but it works also, is filtration. This virus, you know, and respiratory drops are just coming out really light. They're like cigarette smoke. Hmm. They just fill a room. And so, you know, you would have to work. You should be, I know one of the questions was about a security guard in the hallway. There was no one around, but there doesn't have to be anyone around. It's like cigarette smoke. It can be there when no one's, you know, it can be there when no one's there. Mm. So you need to wear masks all the time. You need to ventilate. You can add filtrations, these HEPA filters. Systems stand alone, just filter the particles right out. You know, the point is it is an incredibly fixable problem once you acknowledge that it's floating in the air. And so that's what's kind of been frustrating, you know, to watch, is how many people have tried to make it not be aerosols, but it is. You know, it's a major route, and there's really no other way to explain the things that you're seeing.
In a moment, I want to talk to you about why people and institutions and governments around the world have been trying so hard to not make it about aerosol transmission. We'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to pick up your point, Professor Prather, about ventilation. The trouble is, mm-hmm. with a lot of these big international hotels, is that you can't open a window. Right. I guess that might create a problem then with the positive pressure that comes out of the room into the hallway when you open a door. But do you need to be able to open a window in these rooms, or is it, can ventilation be achieved another way?
Yeah, it can be achieved just by having good filtration in the HVAC systems. You know, there's specific filters that will, you know, take out these viruses very efficiently. You can also, a lot of the ventilation that is brought in, you just don't want to recirculate it, so then you're not worrying about moving it from one room to another, right? You would want to bring in, the ventilation system would allow you to, some of them allow you to bring in more outdoor air, so more fresh air can come in through those systems. So there's all kinds of things you can do to just bring more fresh air in. And if you, as I say, if you, you know, also by adding filtration, the right filters into the HVAC systems, those are ways that you can definitely clean the air of this virus.
Professor, we had one of our most esteemed epidemiologists last week talking about the potential of picking up the infection through the eyes. I know that, mm-hmm. that sort of epidemiology is not your specialty, but as someone who works in the field of atmospheric chemistry, does that seem to have, is that theory standing up for you?
Yeah, I mean, there are receptors. I do know that there are receptors in the eyes. And one of the things that people worry about is more, you know, basically coughs or sneezes, where somebody, you were close to somebody and they coughed or sneezed, those really big drops, you need to be close. Those can get into your eyes, right? And so that's where things like, you know, having goggles or sort of face shields can work for the big drops. Coming back to sort of the more common way, it's not in those big giant drops from coughs and sneezes, right? It's coming out in the aerosols, which are much, much tinier and much more concentrated in the air, that just kind of float and waft through the air, so that just based on sort of numbers alone, the chance of inhaling a bunch of small, tiny aerosol particles that are completely invisible, that are kind of just hovering in the air like cigarette smoke, the chance of inhaling is much greater than one of these kind of almost rare droplets, you know, finding its way to your eyes. I wouldn't rule it out, you know, but it's just, you know, that's why we really are focused on inhalation, because it really just, by numbers alone, you know, a lot of people don't even know they're sick and they're producing these aerosols. You produce thousands of aerosols just by speaking. And so that will just accumulate, you know, indoors, and that, you know, the chances of inhalation are really high.
Professor Kim Prather is with you this morning, a distinguished professor in atmospheric chemistry at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography and the Department of Chemistry and Biochem at the University of California, San Diego. And she's been watching the situation here in hotel quarantine in Australia very, very closely. The good news this morning, and it's great to hear you say that, Professor, is that, yes, you can safely achieve hotel quarantine, even with these much more infectious variants of the disease, if you protect your people properly. What else should be done? And then let's move on to briefly talking about the pushback against this theory itself, Professor.
Yeah, it's all linked, right? So, I mean, the best thing you can do, that you personally, anyone can do, the thing you control the most, because there's multiple layers of protection, right? But the most important thing you can do is wear a good fitting, highly efficient mask. And again, everybody points at N95s, because those take out 95%. If you don't have access to that, there's all kinds of other masks. It's better to wear something than nothing. So that's kind of first, keeping your distance from people, making sure you have good ventilation. Again, you don't always control that. That's why the mask is so important, that you do control. A good filtration system, from a sort of infrastructure perspective, people can add these filters I mentioned. I mean, there's just so many layers of, you know, washing your hands still counts, although we don't think surfaces are, you know, a major route for this. There's just so many different layers, but the thing I always point to, if you make me pick one, it's wearing a really good fitting, really efficient mask. And as I say, here we're double filter, we're double masking at this point. That is what you really can control the most.
Just briefly, your reflections on why there's been over so many months now, particularly during, you know, the big first pandemic year of 2020, so much pushback against the reality of aerosol transmission. What's been driving that, Professor?
Oh, that's a tough one. I can come up with a million reasons, probably, different reasons for different people. But one is just really hard, I'm learning, in the medical community to kind of overturn something, you know, a theory. We've always thought it was in the droplets, the big stuff from the coughs and sneezes, and this one just is not. And so this is a theory that goes back to 1912. It's in all the medical textbooks. It's a paradigm shift. I think we're getting there. I really do, largely because we brought aerosol experts like myself have come in and just made such a, you know, we see them, we know the aerosols are there, right? I mean, we can measure them now. In 1912, you couldn't. So that's kind of like overturning a medical dogma like that is really, really hard. The other problem here in the U.S. was early on, and still, sadly, we don't have access. If you said, okay, the safest thing, everybody wear N95 masks, you need to be able to supply those masks to everyone. And places like Taiwan, that's exactly what they did. They got the right masks, good masks for everybody, and supplied them. But we still are grappling with, you know, well, if we say this is the best thing, can we actually come through and deliver? And so, you know, now we're looking into, you know, what's the best mask everybody should wear, right? Mm-hmm. People that are in healthcare settings, obviously the ones that should, and frontline workers should get the best masks, but somebody working in a quarantine hotel should be right up there too, right? So I would not be comfortable going with less than N95 for them. For the public, I think this double masking idea is a good one. You know, it's what I do, and I'm comfortable with it. And I don't know anybody who's caught it doing it, you know, doing it. So there's different levels of protection depending on, you know, your risk.
Well, that's great to know. We're in the very happy circumstance, touch wood, here in Victoria, where we don't have to go about masks unless we're going into public places and the like, and in our homes with each other. If there are large groups, it's advised as well. We're in a much better place, and we really hope that the US gets to that better place soon as well. Professor, thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you very much. Good luck. Okay, stay safe.
And you, Professor Kim Prather there from UC, University of California, San Diego, Distinguished Professor in Atmospheric Chemistry.